This is The Record. I'm Marcy Silman. Last weekend, people from around the Puget Sound area brought some of their cherished possessions to the Pacific Science Center. Nope, wasn't an Antiques Roadshow taping. These folks wanted Ripley's Believe It or Not museum employees to appraise the oddities that they had had squirreled away in the attic. Some folks hoped to make a little cash by selling their stuff to Ripley's. Others just wanted confirmation their possessions were truly bizarre. Our producer, Amina Al-Sadi, checked out some of this weird stuff.
This skeleton was found in the bottom of a molasses barrel in Beauharnois, Canada, probably around 1870.
One is an airplane painted on the head of a pin with a one-haired brush. The artist's name was Manuel Andrade from Argentina. And the other one is St. Peter's Basilica in Rome, painted on the head of a pin.
Wow, head of a pin. That last voice you heard was Edward Meyer. He's vice president of exhibits and archives for Ripley's. And the pin was something that Ripley's actually bought. Ripley's, Believe It or Not, has museums all over the world, and some of their collections on display right now in a traveling show at the Pacific Science Center in Seattle. Victoria Kane teaches history at Boston's Northeastern University. She says once upon a time, oddities like the pin or the rest of Ripley's collection were staples of natural history and science museums. That began to change in the mid-19th century.
Science started becoming an independent and professionalized discipline, a different way of approaching the world. And museums also became eager to throw up some boundaries. They were no longer about freaks, they declared. Their museums were going to be respectable, and they were going to teach only real, verifiable, good science. They didn't want to have anything to do with freak shows or kind of old-style museums, so like P.T. Barnum's American Museum, that became anathema to a lot of curators. And they spent a lot of time trying to exorcise the ghost of Barnum from their halls.
I'm talking to Victoria Kane, who's a history professor at Northeastern University in Boston. And so we had the split in the late 19th century, and we had the sort of, I want to use the word stuffy, but it's more the traditionalist view of a museum. How do you trace the legacy of that late 19th century P.T. Barnum in the whole genre of oddity museums?
They survived and they persisted, whether it was, you know, on back country roads or really even in back rooms of museums that had grown respectable in the 20th century. People, I think, have always been interested in looking at unusual things, things that force them to reexamine the categories that they normally take for granted. So whether it's something giant or something tiny or something just startlingly unusual, they've always wanted to look. And I think of late, these kinds of oddities have been reincorporated into museums, but have been made more respectable through the addition of science. Instead of simply marveling at their differences, museums have been seeking to explain the reasons behind those differences.
It's interesting talking to you because it seems like the museum, the sort of official not freak show, not oddity museum, itself has evolved since that split in the late 19th century. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about the 21st century science or natural science museum and how it might be different from one that we saw in 1890.
So, you know, in the early part of the 20th century, you would go into a museum and you would basically see rows and rows and rows of objects, you know, millions of dead birds on sticks. And these museums were quiet and they were considered places of study. Even though they saw their mission as an educational one, their definitions of education were largely very restrained. As the 20th century went on and as museums started recognizing the public's own interests beyond the interests of curators, they started loosening up a little bit, reaching out to children, to new kinds of visitors. And by the 60s and 70s, they were really experimenting with what we sometimes think of as the exploratorium-style museum or the science center-style museum, a museum which put a lot of emphasis on doing and touching. I think in the 21st century, that model has now become de rigueur, and even the most traditional natural history museum wouldn't think of neglecting children or having areas where people could touch and interact with specimens. I think one big difference in the 21st century, though, is the rise of corporations in influencing and circulating exhibits. There are lots and lots of for-profit exhibitions now that go through and circulate through the museum world. So I think the close relationship with the entertainment business and American museums, I mean, there certainly always was one, but I think it's far more pronounced now in natural history and science museums than it ever has been before.
Well, that's interesting, thinking about Ripley, for example, coming to Seattle's Pacific Science Center. So in a way, that drive, it sounds like what you're saying is that drive for the for-profit or the entertainment industry to circulate exhibitions doesn't maybe bring natural history and oddities back together permanently, but you kind of have a new take on the 19th century museum.
I think that's about right. I mean, in the 19th century museum was all about profit, and now museums, it's a hard time to be a museum. You got to keep your door open. You got to keep the lights on. And so any time that museums can franchise something or open an exhibit that draws a huge number of people that might allow them to do some of the less sexy things, like climate control their specimen collections, or open another lab or an excavation site or a gallery that they think is really important but they know won't draw as many people. Museums will often, I don't want to say dance with the devil, but maybe take risks or extend a hand to folks they might not normally have reached out to if there weren't a lot of money involved.
Victoria Kane teaches history at Boston's Northeastern University. The Ripley's Believe It or Not exhibit will be at Pacific Science Center in Seattle through January 4th.